Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, let's get ready to rumble!
This is a journey into sound. This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new value. When all is ready, I throw this switch.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide.
Get into the game, but it's always the same. I'm the man with the name, Hippopotamus Boy. Oh boy, call me whatever you may. I ain't stopping the train, I got a bill full of pain. Hippopotamus Boy, oh boy. And I know that I can't defeat you. Yeah, but you don't worry now, I ain't going to preach to you.
Funny about human beings is we have times where it's like, okay, now I'm learning and now I'm not learning. Like there's certain flows of information that we allow in because it's the way information should flow in, and there's certain flows of information that we don't let in because we think that's not how it works. So for example, I don't know if this ever happened to you, but if you've ever had a problem and you're standing in line,
yeah,
and you're listening to a conversation behind you, and they're talking about something very similar to your problem, and in fact, it almost seems like the exact advice you need for yeah. your problem. This has happened to me before, where I've been listening, I'm like, Jesus, that sounds just like this thing I'm worried about. But then I'll be like, I'll just ignore it, because I'll think, well, that's not how you get answers to questions. It doesn't come from overhearing people talk. So this is an invalid field of information. So in the same way, it's like Battlestar Galactica.
That's not how I'm going to discover God.
I'm not going to live my life according to the ethics of a Battlestar Galactica character that I admire, because that's just a fictional character. Instead, I'm going to live my life according to a fictional character that more people believe was real.
So
you know what I mean? So this is like the funny way that humans are. So like, if you, so it's like, okay, take Ganesh, for example.
Yeah.
Elephant-headed...
Yeah, that's God. What people care. Like, I can't get behind that.
Well, no, a lot of people get behind it.
Well, yeah.
You know, they'll have Ganesh statues everywhere. But if you come to a person's house and they've got, like, pictures of Luke Skywalker everywhere, you're going to be like, what the fuck is going on with
it's
you,
all
man?
Just mythologies.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But because a thing is a mythology doesn't mean that it doesn't point in
it. This thing on witchcraft, and they were talking about in Africa, and people were, like, saying how, like, you know, they're burning people, and they're, you know, and some people, like, they go to witch doctors for advice and stuff.
It's yes.
Like either demonized or not demonized. And some people, like, with education, with these witch doctors kind of in the hunt for witch doctors, would that kind of go away? And they're like, oh, no, people are super educated in Africa. It's not that Serengeti shit. Like, there are professors here. There's, like, colleges.
Yeah.
It's not about that. And then one guy was like, no, it's just part of our like, history. It's like, you got, I mean, yeah, okay. The idea of a woman riding around on a broom is ridiculous, but you guys believe in angels riding around, just flying around,
right?
Like, literally, what is the difference?
What is the difference?
Yeah, it's they're all ridiculous.
It's just so ridiculous.
Thank you.
So the mind starts with the obvious ridiculous things, especially pretty much anything on the surface level is absolutely ridiculous, yeah. Right? So like, let's take a accepted mythology that a large percentage of the planet actually believes. So let's imagine that Jesus Christ on the third day rose again. So here is a man who is crucified, put into a tomb,
yeah,
and on the third day of after he died, he comes back to life. All right, so let's imagine that's real.
Okay,
let's look at that. That's not real. Let's just think about it. It's never happened before.
Yeah,
it's never happened. We have no story of a corpse coming to life.
They never saw him again. They were just like, he's gone. It must be he rose. They're like, or grave robbers.
Well, he did. Like, they saw someone who said, there's like a lot of murky explanations of this. But the point is, and a lot of people need to approach it from a kind of vehemently skeptical way. So, like, they need to be like, this is bullish. You might as well believe in the flying spaghetti monster, you idiot. No, man, it's obviously not real.
Yeah.
Of course it's not real, but let's find out what is real, right? So let's start going backwards. So we know that the resurrection of Jesus Christ isn't real in the sense that this is a thing that actually happened. In the same way that I know that Bigfoot isn't real. Like, I want it to be real,
yeah,
but I don't think it's real. I've never experienced it. The same thing is, let's go for UFOs. Okay, well, that's not real. And then let's start bringing it in even more, right? So, like, my name is Duncan, right? But is that really my name? Is that who I really am? That name that people identify me as?
Yeah.
The sound pattern? Nope. That's definitely not me. Like, I'm not a Duncan any more than all the other Duncans on the planet are Duncans. There's a lot of Duncans out there, man. I'm not a Duncan. So then let's take it in even deeper, right? And so you begin to realize that pretty much as you begin to unpackage this existence that we're in, that all of your debasing and debunking needs to come to the ultimate place of, where are you in your body? Are you real? And how are you real? And what makes you real? What part of you is real? And then you begin to realize, holy shit, none of this is real, right? And then that's where you get into some really fun spaces. And that's where it becomes, now at that point, you're like, all right, since this, the mythology of my own self is based on a past.
Right, I'm not really an American. There's no such thing as America. It's just I'm there born in this plot of land. I see the stars from here. You see the stars from 10 feet over. Somebody else sees the stars from 100 feet over, and someone else sees it from 200 miles over.
That's it. And I certainly have no static, like, when you really, like, consider your actual experience of life, it's not as though the camera is always staying in the same position. It's not as though, like, like, there's any kind of anything that is unchanging. Your head is always moving, your visual field is always shifting. So it's like, no matter where you are, there's always this infinite, endless movement that's happening. So there's really nothing solid or stable in a person's life at all. Not to mention the fact that you're on a planet that's spinning, and you're in a universe that's expanding. So you're definitely not staying in the same place at any given time. So the whole point is, you're in flux, and it's because you're in flux, any attempt you make to try to name this constantly changing thing is actually naming what the thing has been.
Wait,
prior.
What?
So as you try to name yourself, well, this is what I like, and this is what I don't like, and this is what I do, and I forgive, but I never forget.
But you won't be like forever. You won't say that forever.
Well, you're always going to be naming the past, right?
Right. So I don't like coleslaw because I've had coleslaw before. I don't like it.
Right, and you're always referring to a thing that happened in the past.
I had it. My mom gave it to me. It was gross.
Right.
I don't want to eat it again.
And the thing that you're referring to is the neurological encoding of an experience that you had that has been completely vanquished by time. So
it's just a memory of a memory.
Right.
Like, I think I'm the guy who doesn't like coleslaw.
Right. That's it. But you're just naming a thing that isn't really you. You're naming a thing that was. So no matter what, the whole process of, like, referring to yourself is a kind of absurd process in the sense that the thing you're referring to doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, that didn't happen.
You bet it didn't. There were moments of dreams I was offered to save. I lived less like a workhorse, more like a slave. I thought that one quick moment that was noble or brave would be worth the most of my life. So I pointed my fingers and shouted few quotes I knew, as if something that's written should be taken as true. But every path that I've taken, a conclusion I drew, would put truth back under the knife. And now the only piece of advice that continues to help is anyone that's making anything new only break something else. When my time comes, oh, oh, when my time comes. I took what I wanted and put it out of my reach. I wanted to pay for my successes with all of my defeats. And if heaven was all that was promised to me, why don't I pray for death? And now it seems like the unraveling started too soon. I am sleeping in hallways and drinking perfume and speaking to mirrors and howling at moons, while the worse and worse that it gets. Oh, you can judge the whole world on the sparkle that you think it lacks. You can stare into the abyss, but it's staring right back. When my time comes, you can stare into the abyss, but it's staring right back. When my time comes, oh, 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 oh. When
it's really fun, because that's where we start getting into, well, what the fuck am I then? You know, if I'm only if I'm not the thing referred to, but I'm the referrer, I'm the thing that is applying meaning, then what is that thing that's applying meaning? And so that's where you start swimming into the delicious, beautiful, wonderful waters of Buddhism, existentialism.
Yeah, well, how does existentialism come into this? Great segue.
Well, I mean, because you're so it's like,
I always consider myself one of those.
An existentialist.
Yeah.
So how do you define that?
I am. That's what it boils down to. That's all it is, really. Just I am.
You are what?
Just am.
Right.
I exist.
Yeah, that's a good, that's, so it's like what's usually used to explain it is like a paper cutter, right?
Yeah.
It has a function. It's a paper cutter. Mm-hmm. It cuts paper. It could be used as a bludgeon, but basically it's just, it is what it is. It cuts paper. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So a human versus a paper cutter. What is a human, right? When a person,
right? What's its job?
Does a person have any kind of pre-existing, unchanging dynamic that condemns it to always being some certain way, right? But because what we just talked about shows that the reality is that just being an am or a kind of undefined blankness that means that, and so this is what they say, existence precedes essence. That means that I am precedes I am a comedian.
Right.
So because what that means is that in every single moment, you're the one putting out to the world what you are. And every time you decide to let someone out into traffic, you're a person who lets people out into traffic.
You become the, instead of saying like, I'm going to be the guy who does this, like, well, you're not that guy. Like, I'm going to go to parties, I'm going to be cool. It's like, well, if you don't go to parties and you're not, then you're just not that guy who goes to parties.
That's it.
At some point, you're a grown up and you're like, you haven't done it in 10 years. So that's not you anymore.
That's not you.
I had to eventually stop saying I was a screenwriter because I was like, wait, I haven't touched a pen to a paper or, you know, typed anything screen-wise in a decade.
I mean, really.
So how pompous to say you write scripts.
How pompous to say that you're anything when the reality is that no matter what it is that you're saying that you are, you really aren't anything at all. And you're saying that you're this thing out of a kind of desire to define yourself.
Well, it's also like what you enjoy. Like in the Stranger, the Albert Camus novel.
Yes.
The guy got this, he's in Morocco, and he got this job. But he got his promotion to Paris. It's one everybody, it's sought after. Everybody wants that job.
Yes.
But he goes, I kind of just kind of like walking in the mornings, just walking on the beach.
Yeah.
You know, in Morocco. It's kind of my thing. People are like, what do you mean? This is a great job promotion. He goes, I know, but I really enjoy the sun hitting me.
Yeah.
And then he's like, has to deal with like, I don't want that thing that everybody says I'm supposed to want. I just, here I am not wanting it.
Well, and that's what's really... That's where you get into this thing where you're like, man, forgive me if I don't want to participate in the desperate game of make-believe that we've all been playing right now.
Yeah.
But this is why, like, if you really want to, like, understand existentialism, go read dating profiles. When someone is describing themselves, it's hilarious because it's like you have a nothingness that's always, that's in a manipulative way describing itself, right? So it's like so funny because it's always that
it's always that what's your best, like what books do you read? And I'm not going to be like, I don't read much books. I'm going to go, Stranger and stuff from college.
Yeah, sure. You're going to say, I am a good person. I love to read.
Yeah.
I enjoy nature. I love animals. And I really, really treat people right if they treat me right. But if you don't treat me right, then you can be certain that I'll never forgive you. It's some version of that.
It's never like, pretty good, but I'm a dick. This one lady was in the supermarket. I could have let her cut in front of me. She only had one item, but I didn't really feel like letting her in.
Yeah.
Or,
you know, the thing about it is I don't really think I'm anything. And I'm basically a perpetual liar in the sense that I know that no matter what I'm doing, I'm just putting forward a character.
All those things are also just comparing yourself to others. I'm kind. Based on what? Based on whoever else is kind or not kind.
And you're not kind. You know,
I'm a runner. Well, are you a runner? You're a runner based on your comedian friends.
Well, you're not running right now.
All right.
you running while you do your dating profile?
Right. No.
No.
Yeah.
So it's, you just sort of all, like, if you consider all the things a person does, right? One thing that we could say, if we're basing like the thing we do the most is what we are, then we should all just say, well,
I'm a sleeper.
I shit and sleep. I sleep and eat and I piss. I'm a sleeper, eater, and pisser because I've been doing these things consistently for the last 42 years of my life.
So the most consistent thing you are.
If that's what, if the way that we're identifying ourselves is based on some consistency of action,
then, yeah, then that's what it
then
is.
And I'm a sleeper.
I waste time.
Yeah, I'm a sleeper, eater, pisser, procrastinator, video game player, and I drive.
I only date ninjas, and you are not a ninja.
Yeah.
So this is what's really cool about existentialism, is that there's two ways to look at this.
Yeah.
So one way to look at it is like the way Jean-Paul Sartre looked at it, which is, this is hell. This is nausea. This is what is
existence? So,
not existence. The fact that I'm really not anything at all, and I'm constantly having to define myself. That means that I'm always on stage. I'm always performing. Like, no matter what, I'm always like performing. And what's more miserable than that? You're in an inescapable situation where you're constantly having to put on a show for yourself more than anybody else. Because the other reality of the thing is, most people aren't thinking about you. Okay.
Right.
Number one, most people don't think about you. And if you want a proof of that, think of the person who bothers you the most in your life and imagine the times you think about them, or the person you think is the coolest person on earth and imagine the times you think about
them.
Most
of the time you're not thinking about them.
But when you are thinking about them, yeah. it's a fleeting, phantasmic sort of translucent moment of either anxiety or some mild happiness when you consider them. And that's the person you care for. For example, my mom. I think about my mom a lot, but yeah. When I think about her, it's like remembering a dream. It's a kind of shimmering thing that, like, it's not as though I'm constantly thinking about her.
Yeah, and people say in the movies, like, it's never a day that goes by where I don't think about her. I'm like, really? I don't always lose it on that.
Well, I mean, I could say there's probably never a day that goes by when I don't think about my mom, but
really?
If days do go by when I don't think about
my
mom. You
thought about it yesterday?
You know, who the fuck knows?
Right.
It comes and goes in like strange moments. But
yeah.
the point is, so no one's thinking about you. And if they are thinking about you, they're not thinking about you.
They're thinking about themselves in terms of you.
They're thinking about a neurological approximation of who you are based on a very...
What they think of you too.
Yeah.
Remember that poem about that guy who had everything in life? He was rich. He was good looking. All the girls liked him. All the guys wanted to be him. And then one day he killed himself.
No.
Shot himself in the face.
Oh, yeah. I see. Yes, I know what you're talking about.
You know what
you're
talking about. It's a high school poem. And there's a thing. It's like, what? He had everything. It's like, I guess not.
Richard Corey. I think it's called Richard Corey. Let's look it up. We'll read it right now. Yeah. Hold on.
And it's like, well, maybe he didn't have everything going on. I mean, it could have been just mental problems, but like at the same time, it's like what we think of someone is not what they are.
Here, let's read it. Richard Corey by Edwin Arlington Robinson. Can I read it?
Yeah, what year is this written in?
This is written in...
Don't worry about it.
He lived from 1869 to 1935, so someone in there. So let's read it. Whenever Richard Corey went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean-favored and imperially slim. And he was always quietly arrayed. And he was always human when he talked, but still he fluttered pulses when he said, good morning.
Wow.
And he glittered when he walked. And he was rich. Yes, richer than a king. And admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought that he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. Wow. So on we worked and waited for the light and went without the meat and cursed the bread. And Richard Corey, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head.
Yeah.
Please don't bring us into your suicide.
Will I see those stars tonight? Will Ava and Daddy away? Cause the blood is spilling, flows like a crimson tide. Red skies turn black as night. Need to see that next sun come. But if they're fiery red in the morning lights, meet you seen that last red dawn. Will I see old misery? Oh, what is dead and gone? In the sails, they cry in vain. Cause the ship they're sailing's made up of skin and bones.
Red skies turn black as night. Me to see on that next song come. With a fair fiery red in the morning light. Me to see that last red dawn. Ooh, Lord. Will I feel the storms are coming? Oh, they whisper, Lord, they whisper in the night. Yeah, they do. And the sea, it just trembles. With his seas that last red light. Lord, with his seas that last red light. Lord, with his seas that last red light. Oh,
so you don't know anybody. So and even more so, you don't really know yourself any more than you know anyone else. So when you begin to realize that you are completely obsessed with a character that you've fabricated, which you call yourself, and that you spend all day long thinking about this fabrication, yeah. It's just this tapestry you've woven together that consists of things you wish you were and things that you probably aren't, mixed in with some stuff that you do, then this is the character that you're playing in life. And so the beauty of existentialism, even though there's what's called, my philosophy professor described it as black hat existentialism, which is just like, forget it, man. There ain't no beauty here. It's basically a kind of awful malfunction of the universe.
Well, a lot of people say existential has no place with God, right? They can't coexist. And some people say, no, they absolutely can coexist.
Yeah, because you have like the atheist existentialists, I think, Camus probably was an atheist, definitely Sartre. And then you have the, like...
the Voltaire types that are like...
You have, like, Kierkegaard, Soren Kierkegaard, and Dostoevsky, who are just, like, you know, very religious. Can God exist? So the idea is, it's like, all right, well, if there's some God that has created us, then what is this being, right? I mean, it's like the Dostoevsky's description of religion or of Jesus is amazing. There's basically a parable, and I don't know if I've talked about this on your podcast before, I'm sorry.
I don't think so.
But there's a parable. So you know who Paul is?
Paul
and who wrote the epistles in the Bible.
Is he the one that came across Jesus on the road?
Yes, to Damascus.
Okay.
So,
and he didn't give it up for him enough.
Well, no, he never.
He felt bad about it.
He hallucinated Jesus.
Oh.
He didn't even see Jesus.
Oh.
So this guy's name was Saul of Tarsus, and he was stoning the
earth. What I'm going to call my son.
Saul.
Saul of Tarsus.
That's great. It's cool. It's perfect for your son because I'm sure your son is going to be an asshole to Christians.
Yeah.
And Saul and
I raise him right.
If you raise him right. And Saul of Tarsus was taking part in the national pastime, which was stoning Christians. They would just throw rocks at Christians.
Son, a lot of people believe in different things. Like some people believe in Jesus. No, we don't believe that. What we believe is we have to mock those people and make their lives as hard as possible.
And that's what we do, Saul. Well, that's what Saul was. And so the story goes, I guess it's called The Road to Damascus. And so you'll hear that was his Damascus experience. But basically, Saul was walking down the road to Damascus. And
epiphany. It was the first epiphany in the world.
That's a hallucination where Jesus appears out of the sky and says to him, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? And Saul's like,
Jesus still alive at this point or gone?
No, this is a Jesus spirit. Like,
I know, but this is after he's
dead.
Okay.
Long dead.
Okay.
Long dead and risen. So suddenly Jesus appears in the sky, says to this guy, why are you with me, man?
Yeah.
And so this creates this like spiritual transformation. Saul goes to Damascus, is taken in by the early Christian church and becomes the leader of the early Christian church and writes all of these things called the epistles, which describe how Christians are supposed to live since Jesus didn't come back like he said he was going to come back. Because that was the problem, which was basically like this guy said he's going to come back.
He'll be right back, and then
no one showed up. So
he went to the corner store for some cigarettes. He never came back.
He just, something happened.
Yeah.
Put out an Amber Alert because he's not coming back. So this...
little Domino's tracker on Jesus.
So there had to be a little revision to the story, right? So that's what Paul did. And so Dostoevsky talking about this moment where Saul has a vision of Christ and his whole life changes. He goes from being an asshole to being a saint. The question he asks is, did Jesus touch Saul in some way with some metaphysical ray? Did he convert him
to make him be this other thing?
Right. Did it create a kind of like atomic chain reaction?
Powder or the Green Mile.
What do you mean?
They get to touch you and like, oh, I see everything. And now you have no choice but to believe.
Right. So if that happened, oh, well, who gives a fuck? Because you just need to run into the goddamn thing and there'll be a chemical transformation that happens in your body. And you'll become a good person.
Butterfly.
Dostoevsky, the existentialist, says no. What happened is Saul saw this incredible vision, hallucination, whatever you want to call it, and used it as an excuse
to be a better person.
To be a better person.
Worrying is like praying for what you don't want.
If the stars fall down, will you be the kind to stick around? And if the forest starts to fall, will you be the kind to hear my call? Will you be the kind who hears my call? Been good, been bad, been hard to break. With you I feel myself soften and shake. Been good, been bad, been hard to break. With you I feel myself soften and shake. So please be good to me, and I'll be good to you. If the night lasts too long, will you be the kind to stay strong? If my spirit starts to break, will you be the kind to fix that ache? Will you be the kind to fix that ache? Been good, been bad, been hard to break. With you I feel myself soften and shake. Been good, been bad, been hard to break. With you I feel myself soften and shake. So please be good to me, and I'll be good to you.
To me, and I'll be good to you.
I'll be good to you.
Yeah, to me, my problem, I don't mind the religions, but they have to be true. Same thing with movies. They have to be true to the world they set up, you know? So if you have Spider-Man, okay, fine. There's a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Fine, I'm going with you. But Spider-Man can't just start flying.
Right.
Because that's not the world you set up.
Right.
He only has spider powers.
Right.
So if he just starts flying, you're like, you've lost me here.
Right.
So if God wants everyone to believe in him, but on their own, then he can't come and make himself clear to you, because then it's not fair to everyone else. And if you're just, then you can't say, okay, these five people, they get to solve the real thing, but everyone else has to just take the leap.
Right.
It wouldn't be fair.
I mean, it's a very clumsy way to try to teach people. I mean, when you look at it from that
perspective, or everyone should get the vision.
It's really the height of sadism, which is like you just take a bunch of non-beings and throw them into this terrible situation, demand them in the, if the universe has existed for 13.7 billion years, or if you're an infinite being,
mm-hmm.
you bring into existence these minute, these finite beings that if you're infinite, they exist for like, you know, less time than fruit flies live in your house. And in that amount of time, you're expecting them to figure out you exist, to completely transform their innate behavior patterns, and if they don't do that, and it literally in what amounts to you for a seconds,
blink,
you're going to torture them for eternity.
That doesn't seem fair.
You're a f***ing up. So from that, from
just giving a mouse that like gets to the end of the maze, or you're
free. And that.
So wait, so Saul said he saw Jesus, or that was written about Saul?
He reported seeing him. You know, Saul wrote, there's letters from...
Because you know what, the Amazing Grace, you know that song?
Yes.
It was written by a slave trader.
That's funny.
Who eventually realized the error of his ways.
Right.
Sort of the same thing, where it's like, I was this one way with slave, and then I was the exact opposite way.
Well, there you go.
And he goes, you know, I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see, these are people.
Yeah, there you go.
I can't do that anymore.
There you go.
But he didn't have to be touched by a vision of a slave.
Well, no, he had an epiphanous moment, guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that epiphanous...
Maybe saw a woman crying who was a slave. I'm like, wait, she's tears.
Or a dream. Or a child. Or maybe he ate mushrooms. Or maybe he, you know...
Saw them in a different way because of that.
Yeah, there's just no way to
Saul ate mushrooms?
Very possibly.
Is that real hallucination? Do you think Jacob ate mushrooms?
I think that...
When the guy came down the ladder to fight Jacob and he became Yaakov?
It clearly...
I want to learn all these stories with mushrooms in mind.
Right. And then it totally makes sense.
It's like when you realize Coke is a thing, and then you're like, oh, this guy just suddenly fought me.
Have you read The Archaic Revival, Terrence McKenna? You have to read it, because that's 100% what it's about, which is that all mythology has its roots in mushrooms. And
I'm waiting for that to come out on Neural Implant. And then I'll read it.
Audible is as close as you're going to get to that right okay, now. And it's a great Audible book. And it's really quite understandable. And really.
So what is it? What is it about?
So the idea is that, there's all kinds of like fascinating things that happen when proto-hominids transformed into human beings. And so the idea is like these beings moved out of the forests into the grasslands. And they started, I'm sure you've heard this before. So they're hunting, we're omnivores, we're going to eat whatever's out there, we experiment with food. So his premise is that because bovine animals are going to live on the grasslands and we're hunting them, there's going to be mushrooms growing on their ish. So there's mushrooms growing on the ish of the things that we're hunting. And
we're eating everything.
And we're eating everything.
Let's try these.
He refers to this study done where they found that psilocybin gives you increased visual acuity in the peripheral. So apparently if you're on psilocybin, you can see better what's going on from the sides.
Oh, better for hunting.
And there's a severe evolutionary advantage in doing that. Not only that, but it makes you horny. So if you're eating mushrooms and it's going to help you
mushrooms hunt, make you horny?
Have you ever had sex on mushrooms?
I don't believe I have.
That's shocking.
I've jerked off on it.
Yeah.
It feels wonderful.
Yeah. Well, sex as well.
Okay.
So, I'm assuming. So, yeah.
it's anything like real masturbation
and
real sex.
McKenna's theory was that these proto-hominids were eating these mushrooms, getting better at hunting, and this creates this kind of like loop, right? A behavior pattern where it's like, as we're hunting these things, eat the stuff growing off their ish, and you're going to be more tuned in with nature, and the hunt's going to go better. And so now we've got a symbiotic relationship emerges between this fungus and these proto hominids, and that symbiotic relationship created this expansion of the neocortex, which eventually created human beings.
There was a mushroom, sad little mushroom. There was a meadow, ready to cry. There was a sparrow, gray little sparrow. There was an eagle, silent and high. And the Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, laugh, laugh. Then the Lord, he said, I created for you a world of joy from out of the blue. And all that is left to complete the joy, just the laugh of a girl and boy. Yay, yay, yay. And there was a garden, beautiful garden, held in the arms of a world without joy. Then there was laughter, wonderful laughter, for he created a girl and a boy. And the Lord said, oh, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh, children, laugh. The Lord said, laugh. Yay, yay, yay.
The reason why certain people turn to philosophy, why I became a philosopher, was that since I was a little boy, I always felt that existence as such was weird. I mean, here we are. Isn't that odd? Of course it's odd. What do you mean by odd? Well, that's what's different from even. I mean, what's odd stands out. What's even lies flat. But you can't see the outstanding without the flat background. Here's the thing standing out. It's odd. Each one of you is odd. Strange, unique, particular, different. How do we know what we mean by that? Except against the background of something even that is not differentiated, like space. And so you get this philosophical itch. You begin to scratch your head and think about why is that so? Well, after a while, you realize that's a meaningless question. And you ask, how is it so? Well, that leads you into science and other investigations. So you want to know, what is it? I mean, this happening, this thing called existence, what is it? You ask that question long enough and it suddenly hits you that if you could answer it, you wouldn't know what terms to put the answer in. I mean, when we investigate the properties of nature, and we do get some answers, all the answers are in terms of particular structures, forms, patterns. And these can be measured, and their behavior can be predicted. But when I want to ask the question, what are the forms made of? I mean, what is it really? We can't think of any way in which we could answer the question. Because we would have to have a class of all classes. When you ask the question, what? It's like saying, is you is or is you ain't? Is you animal? Is you vegetable? Is you mineral? Are you a Republican or a Democrat? Are you male or female? Are you a Christian or a Jew or a Hindu or what have you? We classify always to give an answer to the question, what is it? And when you classify, you distinguish an inside group from an outside group. Right. So what we want to know is, what is the group of all groups? Well, we can't imagine what the outside would be. So we can't answer the question. What is it?
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Go to sleep. Too hard standing on my own two feet. Been walking too long on a dead end street. I guess I should go to sleep. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll take off my shoes, head upstairs, and then watch the news. That's another way to lose these walking blues. I guess I'll take off.
Go find the others.com.
Is that not the greatest suicide ever? Yeah. That's the point I was making.